guys, welcome to episode 67 of Inside the Cage. Scott and Mark with you. As always, don't worry, we are still maintaining social distancing, doing the call over Skype, following the COVID-19 guidelines. How are you, Mark?
Yeah, by the way, just at a point. COVID-19 guidelines are a bit confusing, I thought, but that's a different matter. The new ones, aye. It does apply in Scotland anyway, but it's just a bit confusing.
It's what it is, mate.
Fuck it, it's not the important thing to talk about, is it?
Nah, exactly. It's nonsense, mate. As long as everybody does their bit and looks after each other, we'll be fine. But how are you all on that?
Brand new, mate. Just want to get stuck out of this show, because it's fucking got to be class, I think. It's got to be some show with us. Fight card at the weekend is unbelievable, so.
Well, let's just start then. UFC 249 from Jacksonville, Florida, and probably the best card I've seen, to be honest. It's got to be up there with the best ever. I've not seen every card, so I can't comment, but wow, mate.
It was just unbelievable, mate. Some of the fights were just absolutely class. From start to finish, there wasn't a lot that you would say, I can't bother watching that, or that was shite. I fell asleep during that because it was 3 in the morning. Most of it just kept you buzzing the whole night. And
how long did it last?
End of Cerrone Pettis. I just gave up after the prelims. I thought, I can't go any longer.
I know. Just because you stopped messaging me, I was about till the end of the prelims.
My phone died playing. And I couldn't be asking up to fucking plug in. I was being a lazy bastard.
What a prick.
I know.
We were kind of chatting, having a chat as well, and I was like, he's falling asleep.
No, I was still awake. I seen Cerrone Pettis, and then kind of went, I better go to my bed. My phone was dead, so I couldn't be asked charging
it. So I guess there really is only one place to start here.
Yes. Justin fucking Gaethje. Unfucking believable.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I offer a full and warm and heartfelt apology to Justin Gaethje because I basically said he wasn't on Tony Ferguson's level. Now, there is maybe a counter argument to that that says that the Tony Ferguson on Saturday wasn't on Tony Ferguson's level either, but I still didn't give Justin a chance. I don't think many people did, mate, to be honest.
I think that was a just different Justin Gaethje from what we've seen in the past. We've seen the reckless Justin. We know how good he is with striking. He's going for it. He's got some chin on himself. No, you don't really see much he's wrestling anymore, but you know he's got that there. But It was one of those fights that he just was calm. He was cool. A few times that the old Justin would have been in there and just tried to take Tony's head off, but he didn't do that. He stayed calm. Stayed cool. I mean, he didn't even pick his moment at any time. He kind of knew through the full fight that he was winning the fight, and there was no reason to kind of go over the top, because let's be honest, at any moment, Tony could have caught him and fucking probably sparked him out as well.
Yeah.
So, it was one of those ones. He did keep his time, even when the fight finished. He knew he'd caught Ferguson. Ferguson shook it off a couple of times, and then he just heard him and went, that's enough. Sick of watching this.
It was definitely enough, mate. It was definitely enough. It was a bang-on stoppage for me.
See, his performance, it was up there with the likes of, for a full fight performance, remember Holloway against Ortega, how good that performance was.
Yeah.
It was that type of performance. It was just two guys who were in an octagon in a title fight, and the challenger just wasn't in the same level. Well, the challenger, the champion, strangely wasn't on the same level as the challenger. Somebody just, there was a total mismatch on the night, do you know what I mean? It was just mental.
I love Justin Gaethje for one thing.
Chucking the belt away.
Fucking Justin Gaethje.
Liked it, man. Loved that. Get that fuck. I don't want that. Keep it, are you?
I fucking love it, man. That's brilliant. I mean, it was immense, mate. He was so calm. Like, was it between round 3 and 4 when Whitman said, how are you feeling? And he was fucking buzzing. He was pure smiling and laughing with Trevor Whitman. And you're like, wow, man, look at him. He's like, but see, as soon as that bell rang, as soon as he stood up, it was all concentration. There was no emotion in Justin Gaethje's face. Whereas when he was sitting down, there was one thing I noticed that was a bit awkward. I don't know if it was after the second round. The cut man came over to Justin before he'd sat down and shoved like a cotton bud up his nose, and Justin Gaethje was like, what the fuck are you doing? Did you notice that?
Yeah, I thought it was he was trying to take his mouth guard out of his mouth. That's what I thought he was trying to do. Maybe he didn't.
Because they're not supposed to touch your mouth guards. The cut man, that's supposed to be like the corner. But he shoved like a cotton bud up his nose and he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
I thought he was trying to take the mouth guard out of his mouth, and that's why Justin was pissed off. It's as if, what are you doing, grandma mouth type thing. That's what I thought it was. But
maybe it was. Maybe that's what it was. But it just looked like from the angle I seen. But Honestly, mate, as I messaged you yesterday, I honestly don't think I have ever seen such a good performance from one fighter. I know Adesanya against Gastelum was class, but that was really only one round where he stepped up. The other four, he was kind of mundane. I suppose if you go back to, like, guys, the Jones-Gustafson fight, that was two guys who were brilliant, but as in a single performance, I think that's definitely up there for one of the best I've ever seen, man. It was utterly incredible to have that.
These performances you get to the end of the year and the award shows and all that, and you go, that's a performance of the year that 100% will probably win, to be honest. The only way he won't win it for that performance if he puts on something similar against Khabib, which he's going to have to do.
Yeah, I still don't know with Khabib. I think people have said before that Gaethje might be a genuine threat to Khabib because he can wrestle, and on that performance I would be a wee bit more scared if I was Khabib, because if he can dismantle Tony Ferguson, who everybody said was going to be the one person that Khabib would struggle with, I think you've got to take him seriously and go, do you know what, football, this boy can fight. I just love the fact that he was so reckless before, and he looks like a different fighter. That's not anything like any Justin Gaethje I've ever seen.
No, 100%. It was like he didn't go like a Justin Gaethje kind of, he didn't basically become a 2.0 Justin Gaethje, such, no, went up one level, he went up two or three levels there.
Aye.
There was just a totally different fighter. It was incredible to watch. You can see how much he's improved. I imagine maybe even the 3 weeks between what was supposed to be 249 and this becoming 249 made a massive difference to him as well. Maybe gave him that bit extra time to be ready, a bit more calm. I'd imagine if maybe he went to that fight back in April, possibly, he'd have been absolutely too buzzing. He'd have been too excited. He'd have been wanting to get in there and basically just trying to take his head off, and maybe too reckless, as the old Justin would have been. Maybe this gave him a bit of time to go, I'll calm down, relax. He's got one of the best coaches in the world, Trevor Whitman, without doubt, is one of the best in the world. Calm him down, sort him out, take your time, relax. Just go not fuck him. Do what you do. Do what you're so good at. Yeah. His striking was unbelievable, man. Some of the punches were just unreal.
It's not so much, it's the rate, mate. It's the rate of...
the rate, he does it, yeah.
Ridiculous. Like, it's the percentage rate that he does it. He doesn't miss. I almost feel as if that left hook... You and I mentioned, obviously, Vicente Luque with the left hook from hell, right? One of the best left hooks I've ever seen, like, as in a single left hook. But those left hooks that Justin Gaethje was throwing was, like, ridiculous, mate.
He just kept hitting them every time. You seen Tony's eye at the end of the fight. It was just in bits. It was starting to close over, it cuts under the eye, it was swelling up. I think he'd actually broke his orbital bone, like the right-hand side of his face, Tony.
Yeah.
So it shows the damage that Justin was doing, the accuracy that he was flinging the punches at. It was just unbelievable, and it was just so good to watch. It was just a joyful performance.
Do you think, like, obviously Tony made a point in his interview afterwards, basically saying that the weight cuts didn't affect him. Do you think that did?
I thought he looked a bit slow, which possibly you could say was due to the weight cuts. I don't know. Possibly. I'd imagine cutting that kind of weight. Tony's no small guy, cutting that weight twice in three weeks, did we say earlier on? So three weeks, you're cutting that weight twice. Quite a lot, I imagine. Imagine a bit of strain in your body. Your muscles have got to recover, obviously, after that. Even when they do lose the weight to get into a fight situation, their muscles still probably aren't 100% getting into the fight themselves. So do that, maybe your muscles are partially recovering, then all of a sudden you're battering it back down with another weight loss. Maybe it did affect him. Maybe he didn't look like Tony Ferguson. I think that's the one thing. As good as Justin Gaethje was, I don't think Tony Ferguson was good as Tony Ferguson could be on the night.
Yeah, I completely agree, mate, 100%. I don't think that was anywhere near as good as what Tony could be. And that seems harsh on Justin, but that's not why we're saying it, and it's not why we think it. I'm not a Tony Ferguson fan. I'm not a massive Justin Gaethje fan. Everybody must love watching Gaethje because he's exciting. But I'm not a massive fan of him, as I would say. So I'm certainly not trying to blow smoke up Tony Ferguson's ass here. I'm definitely not. There was just something missing from Tony on Saturday, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it was because Gaethje was so good that Ferguson couldn't get going, but I just felt as if Ferguson never looked dangerous at all, like not even once. Not even one of those rounds. For me, it was 4.5-0 when it got stopped, mate. If that had went any further, I think there was maybe even a couple of 10-8s in there. I think that could have been a really, really bad scoreline. Really bad.
Well, the only time that Tony did look dangerous at any point. It was the one time he knocked Justin down in the first round, wasn't he? He knocked Justin down in the first round.
Yeah, second round.
Towards the end, when he was the first to set a count, I can't remember exactly what it was. That was the only time that he actually hit Justin with something. You go, for fuck's sake, right? Maybe it's tight turning here. Maybe Tony's going to come into it. He's going to start putting his style on the fight and start taking Justin apart. And it just didn't happen. And don't get me wrong, it was still a great fight. It was still great to watch. But it was just so disappointing that Tony wasn't as good as Tony could be. Because if you can imagine Justin as good as he was on the night, and if Tony was as good as Tony can be on the night, it would have been one of the greatest fights of all time. It would have been up there with our John Jones Gustafsson fights, without doubt.
Yeah.
Two fighters at such a high level just going in there and basically trying to knock each other's heads off. It would have been incredible, man. I was kind of gutted that Tony wasn't as good as he can be, but it was still a great fight to watch, man. I definitely need to go back and watch that performance again at some point, Gaethje's performance, because it was just unbelievable.
Definitely. I must say, though, right, I am genuinely, right, from the bottom of my heart, gutted for Tony Ferguson, because all these years of trying to get a shot at that belt, for whatever reason not getting one, the Khabib fight getting cancelled a couple of times, never getting a shot at Conor, just, he always just seems to be that one step away. And not that he won't get a shot, I'd imagine he probably still will, but to accumulate a 12 fight win streak over the space of however many years it's been, aiming for that belt, never really quite getting a shot at, not through any fault of his own. He's been due a title shot for fucking years. Like, he's been due one for genuinely like 3 or 4 years, definitely, and he's never really quite got it. And I think that is what upsets me the most, is because he's a genuinely, he seems like, okay, sometimes he seems like a bit of an arse, but he genuinely seems like a nice guy, family guy. And just, I don't know, man, I just kind of, after I let the dust settle, I was like, oh, Gaethje, that was class, and can't wait to see him fight Khabib. I was like, well, man, I'm actually genuinely, genuinely gutted for Tony Ferguson, like, proper, man. It was horrible.
Well, we released episode 66 of Friday. If you listen, somebody did listen to that, they'd realise that's what we said on the night. This is such a massive fight for Tony as well. The risk he was taking in this fight, getting in against, he was risking his title shot, he was risking that fight against Khabib. Dana always said it, whoever won this fight was going to get the shot against Khabib, without doubt, and that was always going to happen. So it was massive for Ferguson to take that, and now looking back now, he must be absolutely maybe gutted, raging with himself, that he didn't have to take the fight, let's be honest, he didn't have to take the fight. He'd basically done it as a bit of a favour to the UFC. He was waiting for his title shot. He was just waiting for Khabib to go, right, I'm ready, let's fight. That was all that was. That's what Tony was waiting for.
Yeah.
Obviously, this virus and all that, got the original fight cancelled. Maybe Tony decided, fuck it, I still want a fight. I just want a fight. I'm in a fighting mood. I want to fight. But he's taking the chance, and it's cost him massively. Where he goes now is another story. I don't know what's next for Tony. It'll be interesting to see. I think there's maybe 2 or 3 fights possibly in a division for him.
It's whether he wants to do it, man, because he's got 36. Do you know what I mean? He's
getting on a bit, but I'd imagine Tony's my kind of guy who will want still to fight for the title at some point. Even if it takes one or two fights, even if he's got to go and fight a Poirier or a Hooker, not them out the fucking way, not McGregor out the way, then he'll get a shot at Khabib, or possibly by that point Khabib will have done a runner. Khabib said he's going to fight with 30 fights, wasn't it, for Khabib, I think he said, and with Chuck
it.
So maybe by that point, he'll be away, and maybe Justin will still be a champion, will fight Justin again for the title. Maybe something like that will happen long term, but I really don't know what's next for Tony. I'd love him to see him to fight Poirier. I don't know why, this time I want to see him fight Poirier again. I know he fought a few years back, and I think Tony won it. Not comfortably, but he did win the fight. But I would love to see that fight again. I think that's maybe one for Tony. The two of them are just off kind of back up two big defeats. So, possibly.
I don't think they did fight, mate.
What? They did? I'm sure they did.
No, I don't think they have. He's never fought Poirier.
Oh, I thought he'd fought Poirier.
Nah. Poirier's fought Gaethje.
Oh, maybe that's where I was getting mixed up there. I think that's where I was getting mixed up. Yeah. Aye, so maybe Poirier has a fight to make.
Yeah, him or Hooker.
Him or Hooker. But then Hooker was supposed to fight, you know, having a fight coming up, and then it'll get cancelled or something, I can't remember.
Do you know an interesting stat about Gaethje? He's had a fit, he's had a performance bonus in every single one of his UFC fights.
Unbelievable, mate. They one of you called the highlight reel.
Do you know what the best thing is about this card? They finally gave a performance of the night bonus based on a performance. He didn't get that because he knocked out Tony Ferguson spectacularly, because it wasn't really spectacular. The knockout wasn't, but no, the performance. No. They finally given somebody a performance who deserves it. Just while we're talking about bonuses, I don't think that was fight of the night, to be honest. I think it was performance of the night.
I probably would agree with you there, but we could come back to that later on once we get further down the card and see if you've got something you would like to volunteer for fight of the night.
I do.
We'll get to that.
What about Triple C against Dom Cruz? This was weird.
It was a weird fight.
I don't know what Dom Cruz was trying to do.
He was trying to do Dominic Cruz, and it just wasn't working for him.
He looked like shite, mate. Like, it was hard to watch.
He was rather rusty, I think. Cejudo went in with a great game plan, and his great game plan was just to batter fuck out his legs. When you've had somebody who's got so many knee operations, I think he's had like fucking 6 knee operations, 4 in one knee and 2 in the other knee. What's the first thing you're going to do? I could tell Cejudo that. Cejudo doesn't need a coach to tell him that. Just go in and kick fuck out his legs.
Yeah.
And as the fight went on, you could see, for all it went 10 minutes, only 2 rounds, but Cruz's movement did slow down. And when Cruz can't move about, it's easier. And I noticed Cruz, he kept going for these stupid pretend takedowns to obviously get in close to and get the punches in. But the one time he went for a kind of a fake takedown as such, fucking Cejudo smashed him in the fucking face with a dirty big knee.
See,
and it was all she wrote.
I watched that knee back a few times, and I don't know, there's something about that that's a bit not suspicious. It was a perfectly great knee, but I'm not sure it was actually the knee that knocked him on his arse. See, if you watch when he comes up from the knee.
The first punch Cejudo hits him was a left, I think, it hit him, and it was an absolute beauty.
No, that was after he's on the deck. But see, right after the knee, when he starts to come up from the knee, they clash heads again. If you watch it back, they clash heads again. You see Henry's hair. You know Henry's hair's all kind of flappy. You see Henry's hair move back. And then Dom seems to fall. I don't know if it happens that quickly that it might just have been the knee anyway. But obviously there was a couple of clash of heads. Well, one done an absolute solid on Henry. But listen, I can't take away from Cejudo. Cejudo was a class fighter, mate. And you and I were always Cejudo fans until he turned into an absolute moron. He's even more of a moron after he's fucking parted after the fight and all. Triple C, don't need to prove it to anybody, I'm a triple champion, and I've got a girlfriend, so I'm retiring. Like, oh, well done, mate, well done having 2 belts and a gold medal and a girlfriend, congratulations, you prick. It was stupid, mate, it was absolutely stupid. See if he'd said something like, you know, I've achieved all I want to do, I've won 2 belts, I've won a gold medal, I beat one of the best to ever do it, potentially the best to ever beat, the best ever bantamweight, that's enough for me, thank you very much. I'd have went, fair play, Henry, but I've got 2 belts and a gold medal and a belt, I'm chucking it. Like, okay, you're a fucking walloper.
Well, he's not chucking it anyway.
Well, yeah. It's one of these ones, and I'm retired until Dana goes, well, here's 8 million to fight fucking Jose Aldo in Sao Paulo.
Like, I think the way he was talking, I heard a few things talking afterwards and stuff like that, and obviously I think, with now having a missus, I think they'll talk about starting a family and stuff like that. So maybe he'll maybe take a year, 2 years out to start a family. Obviously, he's a bantamweight / flyweight as such. They can go for years. They could still be fighting at 38, 39, 40, probably, I would think.
Yeah.
So you could suppose, I think, I would be surprised if we don't see Henry Cejudo in an octagon again, ever.
Yeah, I'd be surprised, Will. I was talking to somebody about... The person I was talking to didn't listen to the aftermath comments, right? All he'd seen was the fight and the end, and that was it. And he messaged me saying, right, Cejudo to 145 to go after Volkanovski. And I was like, obviously, I just shut it down. Didn't even think about it. I was like, mate, he's retired. It's game over. And then afterwards, I was kind of sitting going, wait a minute, because Volkanovski's short and stocky. And Cejudo's not, like, big. I don't know if that'd be actually kind of a class fight, man, to see them fight. I don't know how Cejudo would carry the weight at 145, right enough, but...
I would love to see Volkanovski come down to 135 if he could ever do it.
Fuck off. Volkanovski used to fight a light heavyweight, mate.
Aye. Because he was a fucking rugby player.
Aye, well, sure. Fuck me, mate. I don't know if Volkanovski could cut another 10. But then again, you don't know if Henry could keep another 10, you know? I don't know. These are weird speculations, mate. Yeah, it looks like Henry's done for the foreseeable anyway. I think, see, to be honest, another thing I think about Saturday night, Dominic Cruz, I think, see, if he'd interviewed Dominic Cruz first, I think Dominic Cruz might have chucked it.
I don't think he would have done. I think he's probably put, after that, after being kind of what he thinks is robbed, I think he's maybe thinking he's got a point to prove now. I think he'll want to come back and try and prove a point.
What did you think of that?
First look, I wasn't sure because he was getting back up. I wasn't 100%. The more I look at it, as much as he was getting back up, the state he was getting back up in was totally different things. Don't get me wrong, so as a referee stopped the fight, he kind of looked kind of compassmentous and looked as though he kind of had an idea of what was going on.
Yeah.
But it was, if the referee hadn't stopped it, I wouldn't have complained. But if the referee had stopped it, I'm not complaining, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of get that. What I was going to say was, it was early, but it wasn't shocking. Like, it wasn't, no, oh my God, Keith Pearson's a prick. It wasn't like that. It was like, ah, fair enough, mate. He took. I don't think he took 11 shots. I didn't count 11 when I watched it back. But he took a couple of nasty ones. A couple of them were like kind of fluffs. They didn't really do much damage. But definitely took a couple of bad ones. It did look as if he was struggling. To be fair, Pearson had already made the move in to stop when Cruz started lifting himself off the ground, mate. So, for me, it was a wee bit early, but it wasn't as if it was devastating.
No, I would agree with that.
I think Dom needs to just rein it in a wee bit. Like, you've heard what he's been saying online and stuff like that, Keith Pearson smelt a drink and cigarettes.
Well, see, it's weird. See, as much as he was probably talking shy, or he's maybe not making it up as such, but it's still maybe accusations the UFC will probably have to investigate now.
I know. That's why I wish you just... there's no point being bitter. If you've got something like that to say, then report it. Report it to somebody. Don't just, like... Stuff like that, as you say, mate, it's a serious allegation that the UFC are probably going to have to investigate. But why not say it to the UFC privately? There's no point in airing that out on Twitter and on Instagram. No. It doesn't do anybody any good, mate, and it makes you look like a bitter, bitter dick. And that's such a shame, because I love Dom Cruz.
The thing was, like, the likes of, obviously, drinking and the smoking. Smoking, no an issue. Batter in. He wants a fag, batter in, go and get a fag. But the drink's a massive one. You can't have somebody who's, let's be honest, the referee's in charge of two guys within the octagon. If there was any alcohol in his breath, not saying there was, we don't have a clue, and I don't know if them deliver, no, to be honest. But if there was, then, yeah, Keith Pearson will have to be reprimanded by some sort of, you'd think he'd be struck off. But so for him to, for Cruz to make that kind of complaint or that kind of moan about the referee is very, very serious for Keith Peterson's career as a referee.
They are strong accusations. I just thought Dom was a wee bit smarter than that, rather than spitting the dummy, like pulling his hand away from the ref and then mouthing to the ref as the ref's about to lift.
Yeah, I was about to disappoint in that as well.
Yeah, I'm just like, he's a professional, Dom. He is on the mic and he talks, I don't know, he talks a good game. He seems like a smart guy. And all of that just didn't sit right with me. Maybe slightly early stoppage. Was it really that bad? Probably not. Do you need to come out afterwards on Instagram and all that and slag off the ref? No, you definitely don't. You don't need to do that. There's no need for it.
Nah, definitely not, man.
What's next for, let's say Cejudo disappears and drops the belts. Well, he's dropped one of them anyway, hasn't he? No.
Yeah. He's not really 125 anymore, has he? He's not a 125 champion anymore. So he's dropped 135 as well. So look at that division, you're maybe talking, I think I've seen Dana say it with Petr Yan and somebody for the title. It'll be interesting to see who that is. I personally think what Cejudo said was right, and he should have a wee kind of mini tournament. I think Mirage, Sterling, Yan and Santiago have all got strong claims to be in a title fight, and I think that's the way to do it. Mirage versus Sanhagen, Sterling versus Petr Yan, the winners, fucking two winners against each other for the title.
You could even throw Dom Cruz into that.
Well, I would like to see Dom Cruz fight again, but I don't know if I would put him into a kind of semi-final or a kind of title tournament as such.
Maybe got to find, like, maybe like Cruz Garbrandt would be class.
Maybe Cruz Garbrandt would be a good fight to have back, man. Two guys who are kind of Garbrandt's obviously fucking, I don't know what state Cody Garbrandt is at this moment in time. Obviously, Dominic Cruz just off the back of that. Who's coming down for Featherweight as well? Who's the Frankie was moving down for Featherweight? Doing any battle?
It was supposed to be, aye.
What would sound like Frankie against Cruz?
Cruz would mash Frankie, Edgar.
Probably, but it possibly could be. It's a big fight, it's such a two big names going against each other. It could get a good win for Cruz, maybe back under his belt, get a bit of confidence, and maybe Cruz could come back and maybe eventually put himself into the title reckoning for real, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know what's next for Cruz. The other solution for Cruz is that he, I think he's coached a wee job on the commentary desk, isn't he? So he just totally chucks it again and then just fuck it. When it's on the mic, that'll do it for me.
Yeah. But, possibly. Right. You have 20 seconds to dissect this fight. Go.
Ngannou Rozenstruik.
Because that's all it took Ngannou to finish Rozenstruik. So all you're getting is 20 seconds.
Right, okay. My 20 seconds would be... It wasn't a great 20 seconds. It was an incredible knockout. And it was an incredible punch to knock the fuck out. But he was just swinging for the fucking hoosies. There was no technique involved or anything. It was just a total... barnstormer of a fight, and don't get me wrong, as I say, what a fucking knockout. It was just unbelievable. It took his head off. He was dead when he hit the gun. He really was. Class, man. Good class really knockout, know. Just for the knockout itself, just brilliant to watch, but...
I know. I just don't know. It's a weird one, mate. I feel as if Ngannou fighting the way he did, right, he keeps talking about getting a title shot again and all that, and trying to be a bit more. He obviously wants to be more rounded because the Miocic thing gave him an absolute shocking, like, kind of look at what's like going to happen in this division if he fights somebody who isn't a striker. I think he's a bit disrespectful to guys that he thinks he can just knock out. Like, would he have went out and fought 30 seconds like that against Stipe Miocic or Daniel Cormier? Not a chance.
Well, see, the thing is, he might have to. Maybe it's the only way he can beat them.
I get that, and I understand that sometimes that maybe the way, but what I'm saying is, from a respect point of view, he didn't do it against Miocic, he wouldn't do it against Cormier. I just feel as if he thought, right from the start, he was better than Rozenstruik, and he was going to knock Rozenstruik's head off. Okay, turns out that he did in 20 seconds, but as you say, it wasn't very technical, he just went out and started swinging, man, like proper swinging. Like, it wasn't even just like jab, jab, hook, it was fucking haymakers every single time.
It was John Wayne style stuff, it was mental, mate.
It was, and although people are like, oh, he's a scary dude and he hits hard, aye, great, but see if you're a technical fighter, see if you're a good technical fighter, even... I don't know who to compare him to because he's fucking beaten everybody except Miocic. So, and Derek Lewis, okay, Derek Lewis didn't really beat him, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, just see somebody could just like pick him apart, piece him apart. See if he was to fight some, say Jones was to step up, right? See if he was to fight somebody like Jones.
Jones would
wipe the floor with Francis Ngannou, and that's my point. I love Big Frank, loved him since the first day I ever seen him fight. Class, big, strong. I mean, to be fair, he looked in amazing shape on Saturday. It's the best I've seen him look. Every time I've seen him, he's looked a bit heavy around the midriff, mate, but he was
well underweight as well. He was 258 or something like that. He was
261, but I think it must be less than that because he doesn't look anywhere near as big as what he was before. Unless he's just put like stuff on his arms, like he's put like muscle on his arms, but he looked great. A great knockout, mate. I just don't know. It doesn't do anything for him. Nothing at all. But, yeah.
Like he's always been the next in line for the title shot. When that title shot will be, we don't know, because Miocic and DC need to start their shit out and decide if they're fighting again. If they're not fighting again, is Miocic dropping the title, maybe DC will have a shot against Ngannou, or...
Do you know what it kind of reminds me of?
DC get pissed off waiting so long and decide, well, fuck you then. I'm no fucking... I can't be asked for this anymore. Miocic just fights Ngannou. Who knows anymore what's happening?
Do you know what it kind of reminds me of? You know how in like the Marvel films, you've got the goodie, and he's on his own, and you got all the wee plebs. So you've got your main baddie, right? But your main baddie's got loads of wee plebs, and all the wee plebs trying to attack the fucking goodie, and the goodie just swashes them all away. That's Ngannou with everybody below him in the division.
Aye.
So you've got DC and Miocic standing in front of him, and then you've got all these other people just running toward him. He's just kind of going, psh, psh, just flicking people out the way. He's just kind of moving people out the way so he can get another title shot. That's what I picture when I see these people going, ah, yeah, I'm going to come in, I'm going to knock Ngannou, and Ngannou's going to go, no, bang, that's it. I don't think there's anybody really except DC Mojo that can possibly give him a proper test. I really don't.
Because we just sit on him.
Yeah.
You just see a repair of Miocic and get him in one. You just see it again. Either DC or Miocic, you just see the exact same thing again. They know how to beat him. I'm not saying it's easy to beat him, because obviously he's a big fucking dude, man. He's going to try and push you off, but they're two big dudes as well. So, as I said, you don't know what's next for Big Francis. He will win a title shot. I'd imagine his next fight will be a title fight. When that'll be, who fucking knows?
Yeah, God knows. Still loads to talk about on this card. We're going to have to go through it a bit quicker.
Let's get rattled through it. So we'll go right into Cater against fucking Stevens, man. This boy is fucking unbelievable, by the way.
See the first round.
He's always been slow to start. He said that himself. He's too slow to start in fights, and he needs to get quicker into fights. And fair play, he is. But when he gets fucking going, there are not many better than him at fucking hitting you.
No. That elbow, mate, I
didn't realise it was an elbow. I thought it was a punch.
So did I. I'm glad you said that, because I thought I was the only one. They were like, oh, that elbow. And I was like, what elbow are you talking about? There was no elbow in there. And then they showed the replay, and I was like,
Jesus, what?
It was, like, he absolutely crushed Stephen's face.
Unreal, mate. Absolutely unreal.
He's a real threat in that division, mate. Like a real threat.
Mate, he's just, it's his technique, and he needs to start fights quicker, don't get me wrong, but it's his technique. It's just, it's class. It's just, there aren't many better boxers, because that's basically what he is. He's a boxer within the UFC than Calvin Kattar, without doubt. By the way, he's just, it's frightening. Frightening how good he is.
Perhaps the only one was the guy who won the main event, perhaps.
Possibly, yeah, after the main event fight, possibly that is the case.
Greg Hardy. I thought Greg looked good here.
I thought he was decent. I thought he showed a lot more to his game than he showed in the past. Wee kicks here and there, maybe a wee bit more movement, a bit the kind of waistline moving his head a wee bit better. I think he showed a lot more to his game in this fight than I've seen so far. Then again, I did think Yorka de Castro looked quite good until we passed maybe after the first round.
I mean, Greg Hardy has matchsticks for legs. I mean, de Castro kicked him, like, what, twice on the hamstring and totally fucked his leg.
It was
fucked. Like, that's the kind of fucked your leg should be after about 12 leg kicks. That was after two, maybe even one. I mean, okay, it was literally the perfect leg kick. It was the shin right into the back of the hammies, unreal. Mate. It was unreal, but I mean, it was weird. But I thought Hardy was calm again. He looked good again. I thought it was a bit like when against Volkov, he looked quite good, although Volkov kind of pieced him apart. Maybe a step up in class, but I thought Hardy was decent here.
I did think he was decent. I didn't think he wasn't. As you said, he obviously understood the power that de Castro maybe had, and he didn't want to take the chance. And I think de Castro was kind of similar. There wasn't many moments that either of them done the Ngannou thing and decided just to start swinging, because they know they could knock each other the fuck out without doubt.
They're both too scared of the other guy's power.
Yeah,
it's a shame, because it could have been a barnstorm, and it could have been a case of, you know, a 30-second number, just one hit. But I mean, Jorgen de Castro can hit hard by the looks of things. Like,
he is.
Solid, man.
It did happen the odd time. Greg Hardy did a punch as well, so that was quite impressive. I must say I was impressed with Greg Hardy, but it was a lot better than I thought he has been in the past as such. Yeah, so he definitely improved, I would say.
What about the headliner of the prelims? My fight of the night.
Really?
Yeah, man, I thought this was fucking brilliant. Fight of the night, not performance of the night. Fight of the night.
I know, I heard you say fight of the night.
It was between that and another one on the prelims, but I thought these two guys were class, man. Back and forward, definitely a split decision, possibly the wrong split decision it was like close, it was like 2-1. I actually had it the other way. I had Cerrone winning 2 rounds, but it was fucking amazing, man. I thought it was an absolutely class fight.
I thought it was good. I don't know if it was class. The other fight you were going to talk about with my fight, didn't it? We'll get to that, but it was good. It looked like two older guys for me, or two kind of more experienced guys going against each other, and they did connect, and there was it was tough for me. I don't know who won the fight. I really don't know. I thought maybe Pettis's strikes were more damaging and Cerrone was a busier. I think that was maybe what got it for me. So it was kind of, if it went either way, I wouldn't have been that fussed. But it was a really good, as you say, it was a good fight to watch. You obviously thought it was your fight of the night, so I showed you what you thought about it. But aye, it'll be interesting to see the two fighters go now, though. It was a class, for this to be a main event, or a headliner of a prelim card, is just fucking unbelievable. That showed you the level of the card, so.
Yeah.
Aye, brilliant, man. Absolutely superb.
What about the two old dudes?
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, Olenek, I did not see that coming, man.
Where did that striking ability come from?
Nah, it was crazy,
far,
man.
Far better striking than I've ever seen. Verdun looked a bit rusty to start off with, but I thought he came into the fight. I can kind of understand why the split decisions, I think. Like the first maybe 7-8 minutes, Olenek probably dominated it, then Verdun came back into it and probably got the kind of last round in the rest of the second round. So I can understand a split decision for the referee, for the judges on that one. I don't have an issue with that decision, to be honest.
I definitely think that was the right call, though. I had Olenek winning, but I agree with you. Verdun certainly came into it in the latter part of the fight, definitely, mate. It was so much different from what I thought. They didn't go down on the ground once, and that so disappointed me. I was so looking forward to these two guys.
I'm sure there was not one kind of case where on the ground for a couple of minutes and they were doing all these mad transitions, and it was a bit mental at one point. You got that maybe minute and a half of all these transitions and firing about, and I think the two of them decided, ah, fuck this, let's start up again and let's try not fuck each other. And it was just weird to see. See Olenek with that boxing ability, as I say, it was interesting.
It was certainly an interesting style, that's for fucking sure.
Definitely, man.
I could punch better than that, but hey.
The only female fight in the card. And this was a bit of a dodgy one for me, decision wise. I thought possibly Watterson had got this.
Well, I mean, yeah, for me, Watterson won the fight. It was close. But my biggest gripe is the 30-27 for Esparza, because Watterson definitely won the second round. Watterson smashed her that second round.
I don't understand where that 30-27 came from, Esparza. That does not make any sense. Somebody must have went for a push and just came back in.
Yeah.
Missed the second round totally, because I did not understand that call whatsoever.
Yeah.
Even to say 30-27 for Watterson probably wasn't the right decision either. Probably 29-28 for Watterson was 100% correct for me.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not the case. Esparza won the fight, which I was really surprised. I think even what I seen Watterson's face in the fight, she was quite surprised as well. So
I think she was more surprised because the first 30-27 was to her. And then it was 29-28 to Esparza. And then when fucking Bruce Buffer went and blah, 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 scores at 30-27, Watterson's like, fucking boom. And then they said Esparza. And I think Watterson was like, because I was the same. I was like, 30-27, well done, fucking karate hottie. They went, Carla Esparza. And I went, no, wait, what? I had to rewind it. Right. I was like, what? It didn't make sense. I think that's why she was probably, because Michelle Watterson must have known that it was a relatively close fight. It was close. It wasn't. You know, razor close. I think Michelle Watterson won, but obviously the judges didn't. But
I think most people seem to have that opinion that Watterson won a fight.
To have a 30-27 split over two judges for the opposite fight, that's crazy, mate. It's crazy stuff.
It was a mental one, that one. I didn't understand that at all, man. I really didn't.
Fight of the night.
Lucky versus Price, mate. It was just class. Like, we're talking about the boxing ability of Calvin Kattar and Justin Gaethje, but Vicente Luque is up there for the ability to hit somebody in the same place constantly for a full fucking fight.
It's the power he gets. It's like heavyweight power, mate. Nico Price's chin is made of the same stuff that Tony Ferguson's chin's made of, right?
I'm telling you,
and maybe a slightly diluted version because Tony Ferguson's chin's ridiculous, but honestly, mate, that was a class fight. It was a toss-up for me. I just thought Pettis Cerrone was brilliant, really technical. I like it when it's technical. It's good seeing two guys batter the shit out of each other, of course it is, but I just preferred Pettis and Cerrone because it was just a level above. But Vicente Luque, man, it's such a hard one for me. I love Wonderboy, right? Wonderboy's probably my favourite fighter other than Ortega, and I wanted Wonderboy to beat Luque, but I'm kind of gutted that Wonderboy beat Luque because Luque is a problem for the top 10 guys in that division. And I think getting beat by Wonderboy kind of dropped him back a bit. I suppose the argument to that is if he's so good, he should have beaten Wonderboy. But I just think with all that power and the precision and his tank, mate, he didn't look like he was gassing at all.
No, 100%.
To throw that heavy a left hook with a minute and a half to go in round three, after the brutal fight they've been through, just shows you how much energy and power he still had at that point. If he'd thrown that in the first 30 seconds, nobody would have blinked. But the power and accuracy of that overhand left hook, mate, to fucking smash Nico was unbelievable. And that was after, you know, 13 and a half minutes. That's crazy, mate.
Just as I say, it's an unbelievable fight. Great performance for Lucky. Still a good, great performance for Nico Price as well, man. He's not particularly technical. He's not particularly pretty to watch, but he fucking just loves a scrap. And who doesn't want to watch that?
It's a bit like what Gaethje used to be like. Gaethje was exactly like that.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most technical, loved a scrap, whereas Gaethje's massively upped his game. Nico's obviously a fair bit older, so maybe not in such. Nico Price is 30. Wow, did not know that.
Looks older than that, did he?
Wow, did not know that. But I mean, honestly, mate, it was a class fight. I genuinely believe Vicente Luque is a potential champion at that weight. 28. Two losses in the UFC. Two losses in the UFC. One to Leon Edwards and one to Stephen Thompson. These are no mugs, do you know what I mean? So
I think without doubt he'll get a shot at a title at some point. I don't think he can be that accurate, that powerful, and have that good a gas tank and not run through people at some point. He's going to really have a 2-3-4 fight win streak where he's just going to fucking batter everybody out the road.
Yeah.
And it's got to be good to watch, man. I think he's an exciting fighter. I love watching Vicente Luque as well, man. It's been brilliant. Another man who is absolutely sensational to watch. He's arguably one of the best wrestlers I think I've ever seen, to be honest. Bryce Mitchell is fucking unbelievable.
I love Bryce Mitchell, mate. I love Bryce Mitchell.
Do you want to know what made this such a good performance? Mm. Charles Rosa is pretty shit hot.
Yeah, Rosa's pretty shit hot on the deck.
Aye, and Bryce Mitchell took up a school. He totally dominated him from start. Rosa had absolutely no answers whatsoever for anything that Bryce Mitchell was doing. No.
The only thing that frustrates me here is Bryce Mitchell couldn't finish it.
But then
There was a couple of points, right, where he seemed to do the opposite from what Joe Rogan and DC were saying. He was kind of, he had him in that that arm triangle, and he was off to the side. And at one previously in one of the rounds, he was down the middle, and DC and Joe Rogan said, if he gets off to the side, he'll submit him. So yeah. He got him in the arm triangle later on, and he was off to the side, and I was like, this is it, game over. You're listening to what Joe Rogan and DC say, this is it, game over. And it looked like he was slowly getting there, and then he jumped back in the middle and put his legs down the middle through Thingy's legs. I don't know why you would do that, but it just seemed like he maybe could have finished that, I think, maybe.
I think obviously we'll talk about Rosa being such a good, he's quite high level as well. He knew what to do. Mm-hmm. You see where he did in the kind of some of the next holds he was in, he was using like the telephone grip and stuff like that. He knew what to do at that moment in time.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably part. You've seen even when Bryce Mitchell tried but three times to do the twister again. Rosa always knew how to defend it. He knew what to do at the moment in time, and that showed the high level that he had as well. But it just came out to out-and-out wrestling and keeping somebody on the deck, keeping them flat on their back. Bryce Mitchell was just a level above Charles Rosa at that point. Possibly still needs to improve his maybe jiu-jitsu game in certain ways to make sure he gets the finishes.
Yeah.
But that was just, as a performance, 30-24 for me was 100%. Should have been every single one of the judges was 30-24. Yeah. I don't think Charles Rosa was standing up at any point during that fucking fight.
See, what kind of bugs me about it, right, is that that performance 100% deserves a 50k bonus for me.
And Francis Ngannou got it. Why? For swinging his arms?
For 20 seconds work. Because that was possibly the best 15 minutes of grappling I've seen from anybody.
Aye.
Other than, you know, maybe somebody like Kobe or Usman or something like that. But, I mean, honestly, mate, I love watching that. That to me is what this is about. I love watching that shit. I absolutely adore watching that. And watching him work, man, is just class. And the fact that he's still trolling Reebok as well.
I loved watching that. And I loved watching it for the fact that he was always trying to finish the fight. But yeah. I think, as I said, he was just against a higher level grappler as well who knew how to defend against certain things. And I think that's made it exciting for me. You know, I don't like fucking leg humpers and people that just fucking want to sit there and line top people. Fucking hate that with a passion. But yeah. This was totally different. And he's just an exciting fighter. It was just brilliant to watch. Obviously, you're saying about Reebok there, 100%. I think he's getting his camo shorts. He's fucking goaty anyway.
He needs to get him now, man. Come on, he keeps trolling him. Yeah, I love it, mate. I absolutely love it. I think the boy's class. I think I would love to have seen him do the twister again. I think that would have been beautiful, man. To do two and two fights would be amazing. But he's got a black belt in BJJ as well. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as if he's...
Oh, that's what I'm saying. He's high level. To do him to do a twister shows you're high level. That's the kind of thing we're talking here. So, as I say, just the high level of the other fighter, I think, kind of just stopped him getting in the finish, which was disappointing. But, what a performance.
Yeah. What about the fight that kicked off the evening? Ryan Spann versus Smiling Sam.
Well, I was a wee bit disappointed with Ryan Spann here. I don't know if he was as good as he has been in the past. And it was a bit disappointing for me. He's a level above Sam Alvey. We all like Smiling Sam. What's not I like about Smiling Sam Alvey? But he should have finished the fight. He could have finished the fight. He's good enough to finish the fight, but he just never done it on the night as such. Yeah, good play to Sam.
It looks like he's got all the tools to be a pretty good light heavyweight. Ryan Spann, but there's just something kind of... I don't know. It was weird, mate. It was weird. Have you ever seen a standing triangle choke?
Not that I can think of.
I would have loved to have seen Sam Alvey get fucking tapped out from that. I think it would have been absolutely class to have a finish that was a standing arm triangle. That would have been fucking amazing.
That would have been unbelievable, to be fair, aye. But decent fight.
Yeah, it was decent.
Right decision, possibly.
Yeah, I don't agree with Sam Alvey getting two rounds. Definitely not.
No, I didn't see Sam Alvey getting two rounds, but yeah, probably the right decision. But... aye, what a card. What a night. Bonus awards. Push. Not 100%. Not major complaints, I suppose, but...
Only one I agree with is Gaethje getting performance. Fight of the night, I don't agree with Ngannou. I don't believe... No. I would have given Fight of the Night either to Pettis Cerrone or Luki Price, and I would have given the other performance bonus to Bryce Mitchell. In fact, I would have just given the whole 200k to Bryce Mitchell, if I'm brutally honest with you.
Probably, I don't know. We missed out a wee kind of talking points. Mm-hmm. So quickly run by over him. Jeremy Stevens obviously missed weight, which was fucking annoying.
He did just miss weight, mate. He missed it by a lot.
Yeah, well, I think I heard somebody saying he didn't miss weight. He never made weight. He wasn't even anywhere near close to call it a miss.
He was really, really not close. But then DC said something during the broadcast that I thought was interesting, that they didn't have the tools they would normally have available to them, like things like hot tubs and saunas and stuff like that. So,
but if you know a couple of days out you're not 100% going to make weight, why not give Calvin Kattar a phone?
Aye.
Get your team to phone him. Look, mate, I'm never going to make weight here.
Yeah.
I can maybe make 148, maybe 150 tops. We'll just make it catch weight and we won't need to go through the fucking... It's a bit not embarrassing for Jeremy Stevens, but it's shite for Calvin Kattar to then have to lose that weight when his competitor doesn't lose the weight. So if they just decide to fight 150, that many times a lot easier for Calvin Kattar as well.
Calvin did go on him a wee bit in his post fight interview.
Yeah.
He did actually have a wee go on, which I'm glad I did like the fact he said, listen, cheers Jeremy for taking the fight and you're a tough son of a bitch, but you fucking pissed me off.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he did that, because it means maybe people might not be so scared to actually say shit, because as I've said to you a million times, and it's one, what is the one thing I call missing weight? Unfucking professional. And that's what it is. It's like being an artist and turning up to your job with no paintbrushes. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of idea. It's turning up to something your work without... It's like turning up as a fireman without a hose. Like, it's unprofessional as fuck, mate. That's what it is. The only thing you have to do pre-fight is make weight. That's it. There's nothing else you have to do unless you have, like, contractual obligations, but it's normally your big fighters that have got that. But even then, if you miss that, you miss that. What I'm talking about is the weight is the one professional thing you have to do, and you missed it. And it annoys me so much, mate.
No, me as well, man. It was really annoying. I've just wished that he'd sorted it earlier, because there's no way that you wouldn't have known that you... He was the first man to weigh in as well.
I know.
He knew he was going to miss weight. There wasn't even any question about it.
Didn't even give himself the extra couple hours he needed. He wasn't going to shift to 4.5 pounds in 4 hours, though. A few hours, you know.
So why even
was the window? Is the window 2 hours?
I think it's two. I think it's 9 to 11 or something like that they've got. Yeah. So why even try, which is fair enough, but...
It's even worse being first down the stairs. It's like, ah, fuck it, man. I know I'm like 4.5 pounds over. Yes, boom, look at me. Yeah. Nah, I don't even think it wasn't like that. Obviously, you could see during the weigh-in, he was absolutely raging the whole time. As soon as he walked out on stage, stood in the scales, and it took them ages to get his weight. And I think that made it even worse because he was just getting more and more annoyed. You could just see in his face that he was just pissed off. But hey, it is what it is, mate. Nothing you can do about it. Your man, Qatar, gets a wee bit extra money for it, so.
That's true. The last thing was
Jackery. Yeah, having the old virus.
Yeah, having the virus, which was obviously the one of the big issues people had with us and what would happen if that thing had. It looks like afterwards, only Jackery and two of his cornermen have tested positive. Nobody else has tested positive. So obviously, UFC's precautions that they'd taken, as much as Jackery was out doing the fucking media thingy and all that, and the weigh-ins and stuff. I think maybe stuff actually have been done privately for Jackery, keep him away from as many people as possible.
Yep.
But it looks like the UFC's precautions have all worked, which is good to see.
Yeah.
Good to hear that's what's happening, because I think going forward, if MD, if it came out on Monday morning or Tuesday morning that, say, two or three of the other fighters had caught it, I can't imagine the Wednesday night card would be going ahead.
No.
So I think good that nobody else has caught it. I think Jackery and the two cornermen were both asymptomatic, so they weren't showing any symptoms, which obviously makes fucking life hard.
Yeah.
I think something to do with Jackery was Jackery had a family member, a close family member or something had it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. But he told the UFC before he even turned up, as far as I'm aware, at the hotel. I think they told the UFC came down, we'll keep you fucking, kind of keep you locked up and stuff like that, and keep you away for every day, and we'll get things done properly. And then obviously, once it's come out, he's positive, they've had to cancel the fight, which is the right thing to do, 100%. So fair play to the UFC. I think they've done things well there, to be honest.
Oh, I agree, mate, 100%, definitely.
But
I suppose you've given us a wee nice wee link there into Wednesday's card.
Yes, and we've got a card Wednesday night, which is the weirdest fucking thing in the world, man. It's like midweek football. It's like the Champions League football, and it's like UEFA Cup football, that type of thing. It's European football midweek. It's only, that's what we should start doing, an American card at the weekend, a European card on a Tuesday night or something like Wednesday night. Imagine that.
It's definitely more Europa League than Champions League, that's for damn sure.
Well, yeah, that's probably true, the fight card probably is. But there is some good fights on it. I think Smith, to share a expedition, I think Smith will probably run through to share in the end. I think Glover's, I think he's won his last couple of fights, but I think Smith will eventually run through him. OSP, you'd expect him to take Ben Rothwell, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Hernandez, Drew Dober should be a fucking beauty, mind you. I think I'll back a career fight. I think even Ricky Simone versus Ray Borg would be a good fight, and Carl Robertson versus Marvin Vittori would be a good fight. So I think if there's three fights to watch on that main card, I'd rather watch the first three fights in the main, the kind of co-main and the main event as such.
Yeah, I love Marvin Vittori, and I do quite like Ray Borg. If Ray Borg makes weight,
big thing for Ray Borg, especially in this, obviously the virus going on, everything's not 100%, you've not got access to everything. Can he make weight? He can't make weight at the best of times when he's got everything available to him, so it'll be interesting to see if he makes weight on the night.
He's missed twice in his last three fights, so it's important that he does it this time, mate. It really is. I really hope for him. I like Ray Borg, he's a class fighter, he's exciting because he's got that kind of wrestling, grappling ability, but he's like ferocious with it, he's like relentless.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
But it should be decent. In the prelims, it takes your eye. I can't really see anything that's standing out too much.
Well, Philip Lins sticks out for me because he's a PFL champ.
Oh, aye, so he was. Yeah,
so he's a PFL millionaire. So hockey, you don't know how good the level is at PFL. Obviously, it's decent. He's had a couple of losses over the years. The only name that really stands out on that list is Vadim Nemkov, so it's probably about right that he starts, you know, against somebody who's, I mean, okay, Andrei Arlovsky's a former champ, but it maybe give Philip Lins a kind of idea what level he's on. Michael Johnson's always fun to watch. Brian Kelleher, I mean, tough son of a bitch. So
decent fighters on us.
Yeah.
It should be decent. I've still got to watch it. I don't know when I'll get a chance to watch it, but I will watch it at some point, definitely.
As long as you watch it before next Monday, you'll be fine.
That's the plan. That's definitely the plan. But it means I can piece it and watch maybe a couple of fights here and a couple of fights there, hopefully through the week. But the only thing with that is you'll probably end up finding out the results.
I don't really mind so much with shite fights, mate.
I wouldn't go as far as shite fights, but I know what you mean.
It's a decent poster, by the way.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad poster. I do kind of
wish that they had the two guys, the same kind of zoom, the same kind of turn.
Yeah, that's annoying.
They're both bald. It would have kind of looked kind of good. But
it looks a bit amateur with the fact that the two of them aren't the same height away, size, or kind of height and stuff. Aye, doesn't it look right? We won't probably get a chance to do a show before Saturday.
No, this is us doing it before Saturday.
Yeah, so we'll talk with a quick look at again. We've got an R card for Jacksonville again on Saturday night. So you never done your names, by the way, just to make a point, but there's not really got much time. It's just ESPN 9 and ESPN 10.
Yeah, there's not that many. I'm kind of, I'll just leave it there now. You know, I don't want to ruin my
there's no fight night names anyway.
Exactly. This is certainly more exciting for me. Walt Harris.
Yeah, a far better main card, I would say.
Yeah, Walt Harris coming back is a big thing. It's quite emotional. It's going to be quite emotional for him. This sounds, I don't know how to say this without sounding like, no, I don't think it'll come across bad. What I mean is, I feel gutted for him. It's not in a stadium. Not with a crowd. I feel him coming back with a crowd would have been good for him because it would have shown him there's a lot of, I think the crowd would have been quite boisterous for him and quite loud and cheery, and I think it would have shown him that there's a lot of support there because obviously he's not been around it since obviously the sad passing of his stepdaughter, and also
yeah,
I think for that to have been with a crowd, mate, I think I think Walt Harris would have got a massive lift from that. I really do, because I think the crowd would have been behind him 100%.
The thing is, even though there's no crowd for him, he's got something else behind him, and he's got something he wants to go and put on a show, and
I know.
He's fighting for his daughter now, so he's got so much power behind him as such with that kind of thing.
I don't mean he needs it. He definitely doesn't need it. I just kind of meant that I think it would have been.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
He would have been emotional from it
because stuff like that.
I don't think he would have expected it, and he'd have come out, and I think he'd have got a really, really warm response, but. Class fight, actually, by the way. Like, Overeem's always class to watch, whether he's getting knocked out or whether he's actually knocking people out. I think it's class. Walt Harris was on a bit of a tear before, obviously, his unfortunate break and things like that. So it's kind of exciting, mate, to be honest. It's kind of looking good.
Well, this was the fight Overeem was looking for, really, because obviously, as soon as this kind of all kicked in, he abandoned Amsterdam, didn't he? Abandoned his family in Amsterdam and just flew straight to America and went, there'll be fights soon. I'm fucking getting to America.
So
he's got his fight.
So I'm kind of buzzing for this. It should be quite good. Gedalia, Angie Hill. Angie Hill's fought about 43 times this year already. So
I look forward to watching Angie Hill again, by the way. She's improving so much, man. It's good to see. And I think Gedalia's a bit hit and miss these days. So
yeah, she has been. She has been a bit hit and miss, definitely, mate. Like one loss. You know, it's okay. They're against decent fighters, but
But if we quick look at the rankings there, we could tell you at six in the rankings. Angie Hill's not even ranked. This is massive for Angie Hill.
Yeah.
This is a massive, massive fight for Angie Hill.
Yeah.
I'm actually buzzing for that. She's a cracker, I think. Hopefully.
Yeah, a good fight. There's good fights all over this card, mate. Like, even Dan Ige versus Edson Barboza. How Edson Barboza's making 145, I'll never know. But Dan Ige, the last couple of times I've seen him, has looked really good. So I'm interested to see how that goes.
That's got a belt up. See Barboza make weight, as you say, and I'll be back at him fight in general.
He's on a, like, ever since he lost his UFC debut, Dan Ige, and hasn't lost since. That was six fights ago. So looking good. Anders Jotko has got two class fighters. Like, maybe not like top level guys, but certainly have a decent level to give
good
each other
fighters,
a good fight. Again, matched well. It may not set the heather alight, but it's matched well. A bit like the next one as well, although there's loads of rumours surrounding Song that he's no making it, and I've seen loads of stuff on Twitter about Marlon Vera basically asking for somebody else if Song's not going to fight him, and I was like, I don't understand that, but
I take it Song's in the country and all that, and he's in Vegas, so I've got that
He trains with Sacramento. Oh,
he trains with Thingy, didn't he?
Aye, Faber at Team Alpha Male.
Yeah, true.
Team Alpha, it is now, sorry.
Aye, so there surely shouldn't be any issues that way. It's just, obviously, maybe if there's any other issues with him himself, but I'd be gutted if that get pulled. I think that'll be a fucking beauty. That'll be a cracker if I open the main card.
Again, there's some good fights on this, like I say, the prelims. Some good names, Matt Brown, Kevin Holland, Chikadze, Mike Davis, Darren Elkins, who's always a tough, tough guy, man.
Always in good and fun fights to watch anyway, Darren Elkins, man, always.
Definitely, definitely so.
It's been decent, man.
Should be something to look forward to for next week, for Saturday anyway.
Buzzing for it, man. Cannot fucking wait. It should be good.
Hey, so have you got any news?
Nah. Not really. I know there was one fight announced for Miga versus Perez, Alex Perez, on June the 6th. So that'll be UFC 250. The wee bit of news for the kind of event on Saturday, Sudo was saying he felt dirty even addressing TJ Dillashaw and shuts down a rematch when he returns. Well, obviously we know that rematch is never going to fucking happen if fucking Sudo isn't even coming back. So that's bullshit. Another fight we got announced was Ian Heinisch versus Gerald Meerschaert. I think it'll be decent. Meerschaert was on a bit of a tear, and I think we like watching Heinisch, so
that'll be good.
That'll be us getting thingied at 250 as well. The only other wee bit I was going to talk about, it's about Conor McGregor. We know you don't like to talk about it, but it's mainly a Dana thing. Dana basically said he doesn't really want to put Conor on in an empty arena because he could possibly lose up to $18 million on the gate. So for him to want to see Conor anytime soon, I would be surprised if you're going to see him before maybe October at the earliest, maybe even though this year, to be honest. Because I can't see Dana wanting to lose that kind of money.
Nah, he definitely don't. But who does he fight, though? That's the thing.
Yeah, possibly Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
Possibly Poirier, Nate Diaz. Who's the one I heard? I think the initial things we were talking about was Masvidal. If he doesn't fight Usman, we'll fight Masvidal for this fucking BMF 170 belt pish. That was a possibility. So, who knows?
Can't wait for that.
You're buzzing at your tits for that. Imagine the media star war about that. You fucking hate every minute of that.
I'm muting my Twitter notifications that week, man. Fuck that.
You hate every second of that. But anyway, the other thing was Saturday night, GSP get announced as he's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Aye. Dana White phoned him. Dana White video called him from the side of the octagon.
Did he? I never seen that about
it. It looked like because Dana White was wearing the high white collar shirt and the suit jacket he wears.
Dana
said, it looked like he was wearing that. So yeah. Yeah, cool.
Aye.
Right. Excellent. Well done, Mark. That was a very good show, I think. Listen, thanks as always to you guys who listen. I think there's one of you at the moment, so we really appreciate that one person making the effort. I'm only kidding on. Listen, what we'd really appreciate if you could follow the podcast on Spotify, share it as well from Spotify. It would really, really help. If you listen to it on that platform, it would really, really help get us up, kind of up the rankings a wee bit. If you follow it and subscribe to it, it would really, really help us massively. So we'd really appreciate it if you do listen on that platform, just to follow it and, you know, give us a listen every week. We really, really appreciate
Apple. We're on Apple, we're on Google. Put it on, share it, get people to put reviews on, because I think the reviews will bump us up the list as such, and we'll get us further up and get more people seeing it if they're looking for MMA Postcut podcast. So I get it shared, get it out there for us, please, guys.
And then follow us on all the social medias. Instagram,
Twitter,
Facebook, yeah, on everything. At Inside Cage MMA, give us a like, give us a follow, give us a comment. We try and post some stuff, so we post our picks every week. So comment on that, let us know if you agree or disagree. And listen, thanks for listening as always. And hopefully, all being well, we'll be back this time next week. So cheers for listening. See you soon.